Look at all these happy Al-Anons. Oh my goodness. Well, that's pretty encouraging. 75 people on Zoom, and there's people sitting in an auditorium somewhere with all the important things that represent America, a Christmas tree, a flag, and a rock and roll drum set. My name is Bud. I'm a grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups. I want to thank Leonard for asking me to be here. I guess Leonard heard me speak somewhere, and then he asked me to speak here, and I'm always surprised that people want to hear me again, but here I am. They asked me to be of service. I was looking at my calendar. It's 10:30 here. I was looking at my calendar this week, and I said, did I say yes to that? I guess I did say yes to that. So here I am. I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope. I want to acknowledge the newcomers. I'm glad you're here. If this is your first meeting, or if this is your first speaker meeting, and you like me, then you'll go like, I will tell you, there are lots of people like me out there who've got great stories and know how to tell great stories. If you don't like me, there's other people out there who tell great stories and have great stories. So try and hit another meeting. But welcome. Glad that you're here. And happy birthday to all the birthday people. I think it's terrific to be able to say I've got time. I respect people with time. I've always respected people with time. I think it takes a certain amount of fortitude to continue to keep coming back. And so I appreciate the time that you've been here. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the alcoholic, but I will actually qualify for a little bit. But most of my story really happens kind of after that mess. But I know people like to hear about the mess, so I'll talk a little bit about that. I love talking about Al-Anon. I love talking about my experience of Al-Anon. It's that and sponsorship are like my favorite forms of service. But I've done all kinds of service in Al-Anon, as you'll sort of come to hear. I came to Al-Anon because I was married to that kind of an alcoholic of that kind. You'll hear them share about that in meetings. And I didn't know she was an alcoholic. I didn't have really a clue of it. I knew there was a lot of chaos and weirdness in my life, but I didn't really equate it to alcoholism. I just thought it was, bad decision-making or maybe emotional issues or depression. I didn't even know really what was going on. And we were dating for a while, and she was really struggling, and there was all this chaos and stuff going on. And so I had this idea of brilliant idea of solving the problem by marrying her, because, if you're married to me, you're going to immediately stop drinking and become an upright human being. And that's not what happened. What happened was we got married and things just got a little bit worse. And a year after, on the day after we got back from our first wedding anniversary trip, I got a call. I was at the office. I'm actually from Southern California. I was working in Century City at the time. So I was working in Century City, and I was living in Brea. And so I lived in Orange County. And so I was making this big commute out to Century City to work at this job. And so I went to the office, and I got a phone call at about 9 o'clock in the morning. And it was my wife, and she said, I've been in a car accident. And I said, oh no, are you okay? And she says, yeah, I'm okay, but I'm being arrested. And I was saying, well, why are you being arrested? She says, well, I don't know. And so well, that's very bizarre. Like, I don't have any idea why she would be arrested. And so I, raced out of the house or out of the office, raced home, trying to figure out where she was. Like, I don't even know where she went. And so I called around, and I found out that she was at the California Highway Patrol holding tank. And so I went down there, and I was talking to this very large California Highway Patrolman at the time. And I said, I'm here to pick up my wife. And he says, well, you have to come back when she's sober. And I'm like, well, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. And he said, yeah, I know. And I thought, well, this doesn't make any sense at all. So then I go home and I call lawyers and try and figure out what to do. And then I get the phone call to come get her. And so I go back to pick her up, and she would have been arrested for drunk driving at, I don't know, I think it was 8 a.m. in the morning. And I couldn't understand it. It just made no sense to me at all. And boy, was she angry to see me pick her up. She was so angry. Everybody would be really angry at you because they got arrested at 8 o'clock in the morning for drinking. And so I took her home, and after she kind of sobered up for a little bit, I had a very serious conversation with her. I was stern. I mean, I was really stern. And I said, "You are not drinking again." And she said, "Okay." And I thought, well, you know, this is really how you solve the problem of alcoholism. You just have to talk to them in a very stern way. Like, I think if they know you're serious, like, they'll stop. And she did stop drinking in front of me. From that point on, there was drinking going on, but I never saw it. And I thought she had stopped drinking. She told me she stopped drinking. I mean, I can't imagine she would lie to me about something like that. But apparently that does happen. And so we had like these, you know, so she got arrested in November. So November, December, January, February, it was awful. It was like the worst. And we had, you know, I never really actually met a member of the law enforcement community until I married an alcoholic. And I'm meeting them all the time and trying to explain things. And so, and I really didn't think she'd been drinking. And then in March of 1996, she couldn't get off the couch. She couldn't go to work. She couldn't do anything. And she told me she was really, really depressed. And so I went into her, this is how crazy this is. Okay, this is March 6, 1996. In the morning, she can't get off the couch. I decide to go to her office and talk to her boss about how depressed she is and can't come into work. So I drive down to this office and I sit with her boss and I say, "She can't come down here because she's depressed." And her boss says, "She's not depressed. She's drunk." And I said, "Wait a minute. I had a stern conversation with this person, right? It was very stern. I was very serious. And she told me she wasn't going to drink again. So what proof do you have of this?" And she said, "Well, she stumbles into my office and says she's drunk." And so I don't really have any kind of like comeback for that kind of thing. So I drove home. So now we're talking about maybe 10 o'clock in the morning or so. I get back home and I'm like looking through the closet. And sure enough, in the closet are two boxes of wine sitting right there. And so I took the boxes out, put them down in front of her when she's on the couch, put them down in front of her. I say, "Aha." It was a classic Al-Anon aha. "Aha." And her eyes like popped wide open. Like I just brought two unicorns out into the living room. She was like, "Oh, all right." She said, "Where'd those come from?" And I'm like, "Well, they came from the closet." So I have no idea how those got there. And at this point, I realized that perhaps my wife did not have a social drinking problem. And so I called her therapist. So I said, "Hey, so now we're like at 11 o'clock in the morning. I call her therapist. So I need to make an appointment. I want to bring her down there." And her therapist, you know, says, "Okay." So I, you know, pour her into the car when it's time for the appointment. We drive to the therapist's office and I explain the story to the therapist. And the therapist is looking at me with very sad eyes. And she's after hearing my story, she says, "Yes, it sounds like that she has a drinking problem, but you need help too." And I was like, "Well, I'm probably going to need to tell the story again because you're not catching it." And she's, no, I caught it. It's a, "You need help too. And it's not easy to live with an alcoholic. So I'm going to give you the name of the local Al-Anon office." Now, I'm not really sure what Al-Anon is. I mean, I know a little bit about 12-step recovery, but I'm not really super sure about it. But she gave me the number and sent me home with the alcoholic. So I put the alcoholic back on the couch and I brought the phone out so that I could call the Al-Anon information office in Orange County in front of her so that she would know what had happened to me. That I have to call a 12-step recovery, families in recovery, and it's because of her. So I made the phone call. It was a bluff in a lot of ways, right? Because I was just going to ask for some literature. So I called this lady. She's very nice. And I said, "Can you just email?" We didn't have email then. I said, "Can you just mail me some of the literature? Like, if you just mail it to me." And she said, the only way you can get our literature is actually to go to a meeting. And I thought that was weird. Plus, that's a lie. She lied to me. I just want to make sure you know this, is that this lady at the information office lied to me because I've been to that information office. It's filled with literature. But I thought the only place you could go is you had to go to a meeting. So that night, right? So now we're at 6 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock at night. I go, I find, she says, here's a meeting. It's Wednesday night. She says, here's a meeting. It's not very far. It's La Habra, right? And so I drive to La Habra and I'm scared to death that somebody's going to spot me going into this Al-Anon meeting. Now, keep in mind, nobody knows me because the disease of alcoholism completely isolated me from human beings all over the world. I just, nobody knew me. But I was scared to death somebody would see me walk into this place and, you know, and go like, oh, look, that guy's, this guy's got a problem, alcoholic in his life. And so I went into this meeting and it was a typical sort of Al-Anon meeting, right? It was, you know, 10 women and one elderly gentleman. And the first thing came to my mind is, oh my God, it's a woman issue. Like this, it's a woman problem. Like I couldn't have a problem that was filled with like hardy men. It was a problem with a bunch of ladies. And they were very nice, but they had sad eyes. They looked at me with sad eyes. And it was a third step study. And they asked me to read from this green and white book and I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm reading this passage from the 12 steps and 12 traditions on step 3. And it says, blah, 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 God, blah, 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 God, blah, 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 God. And I'm like, going, oh, God people too. Women and God people. This is what's happened to me. I have been sent to some sort of strange purgatory because I'm married to an alcoholic. They were very nice to me. They said, you don't have to come back. Here's some free literature. And I took that free literature and I said, I'm never coming back here. Goodbye, everybody. And then I made the mistake of reading the literature. Warning to newcomers. If you read the literature, right, you go like, oh, wow, this is my life. It's weird. I was like reading about my life in this literature. And I had this Guide to the Family of the Alcoholic, and it said in there, if one person was sane, there would be hope for the whole family. If one person was sane, there'd be hope for the whole family. And I knew that I was insane. I knew that my life was completely unmanageable. And I realized that if I was gonna have hope for the rest of my family, for the 5 children that we have between us, that I would have to work on me. That would be something I would have to do. 10 days later, I went to my second meeting in Brea, Sunday night, and that became my home group for 10 years. Basically, I camped out. There's a couple of brilliant things that I did when I came into program early. One of the things that I realized was that the best chance of me finding some healing was to help others heal. It's weird, but this whole concept of helping others was going to be a part of how I was going to heal. And so I took a job. They said, take a job. So I took a job. It was a treasurer's commitment. And back there, then it was like a year long. And I was in program maybe 3 weeks, you know, and I thought, okay, I think I'm ready to do something important. So I took a treasurer's commitment at a meeting that was taking in, you know, maybe $6 a week. And then, you know, I was paying for cookies and I was paying rent. I mean, that was all I was doing. But I loved it because it put me in Al-Anon. Like I was in Al-Anon. So it was wonderful for me. And I would always make I'd make my treasurer's announcement. It was never any kind of a big deal, but I always say that, you know, hi, I'm Bud, I'm your self-righteous and dominating treasurer. And I always got a laugh. It was terrific. And so I did that. And I, you know, what happened with the alcoholic is, I'm telling a little bit about what happened to the alcoholic because, you know, everybody's interested. She lives. And she ends up getting sober, and all that happens a couple of years later after I get into program. But for me, what happened is that my recovery began. I realized that that first meeting, when they talked about God and they asked me to share something, what I said was, this is going to be hard for me. But I understand now that I didn't say I couldn't do it or that it was impossible. What I said was it was going to be hard, and it was hard. But at that point, with just that little bit of light, where that, you know, where that crack happens, that light gets through, that willingness, just that little bit of willingness to get recovery and do things differently was all I really needed. And so I started the process of just going to meetings. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. I did my 4th step. I did my 5th step. After I'd been that treasurer in that meeting for a year, I looked around for other things to do. They said, well, you could be an intergroup rep, because if you've got a year in program, you can be an intergroup rep. So I became an intergroup rep in Orange County for my group on Sunday night. And that was great, because then I got to see other people from other groups. I got to see that this is a bigger deal. And I started to understand more of how sort of Al-Anon worked. after I had a year as intergroup rep, I had 2 years in the program, and I said, well, what can I do next? And my sponsor suggested, well, you've got 2 years to be a GR. So I became a GR in Southern California. And in Southern California, for, you guys know, right? You go to those assemblies. Those things are huge, right? There's like, we used to have it down at the senior center, right, Willie? We have down at the senior center. And is 300, 400 people. There's a lot of stuff going on. You see Willie up at the front. You're like going, I don't know who that guy is, but he sure looks important, right? And he looks like he knows his stuff. I was talking about Willie a couple of weeks ago at a conference. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. It just really expanded my world. And then I got involved in convention work. I got involved, I did Southern California AFG. I did publicity there. And then a few years later, I spoke there. I did Orange County AA convention with Al-Anon participation. I did that a couple of years. I did SoCal AA with Al-Anon participation. I did that for a couple of years. So I had all this convention background that I got involved in. It was a ton of fun. I mean, I did a ton of cool stuff. And I was having a pretty good life. I got my kids into Alateen. Like, that was a fight. I was trying to convince the alcoholic, right, that they should go to Alateen. Now the oldest is 13. I want to take them to Alateen. And she thought it was like a place where they learn to use drugs and have sex. And I said, I don't think that's what's going on. I'm pretty sure it's not, because it's like right next door, and I think it would be tough. And I spoke to my sponsor about it. And I said, yeah, she's putting up a fight. And he says, have you fought over dumber things? I go, yeah, in fact, I have fought over dumber things. He says, well, go ahead and fight over this one. And I said, okay. I mean, when you get a sponsor-approved fight, you don't pass up that chance. And so we had a fight about it, and she relented, and I was allowed to take the oldest to an Alateen meeting. And he loved it. He loved it. I mean, it might have been because he was 12 and all the girls there were 14 or 15, but I'm not super concerned about his motivation, because he wanted to go the next week and the next week and the next week. And it was great for him. And what was really interesting, he was interested in flying. And so the sponsor, the Alteen sponsor, that meeting, they used to call them Alteen sponsors, had a private pilot's license. And she offered to take him up in a plane. And so we made all these arrangements, and I took him down there. He's like 14 or 15, I think. And she took him up in this private plane. It was like this remarkable experience for him that he would never have had if he hadn't been in Alateen and I hadn't had that fight. And today he's an airline pilot, just to give you an idea of like how all of that sort of happened. It's like this amazing sort of series of events. After I'd been in program for maybe 10, 12 years or so, I blew up my life. Right. It just blew everything up. The alcoholic had been sober, but it wasn't nice. It's like, it turns out they can be sober and not nice. And so all the kids were in college and doing well, and having good lives. And I said, I'm out of here. I'm kind of done. So I left my job and I separated from my wife and got divorced. And I was looking for work, and I was kind of just like turning it over to God and say, hey, wherever you want me to go, I'll go. And I ended up getting a job in Vermont. All right. So I was living in Orange. So I moved from Orange, California to Vermont. All right. And it's a different world, I can tell you. So I get to Vermont, Rutland, Vermont. And first thing I do is I look for the Al-Anon meeting. Where's the Al-Anon meeting near me? So there's one not that far, two blocks away. So I go over there. It's a Wednesday night. And it's a small meeting, six or seven people, 11 women and two men. And I said, they were talking about an assembly, right? And I said, do you guys have a GR? And they said, no, we don't have a GR. And I said, well, you do now. And they said, oh, great, assembly's this weekend. And I said, terrific, where? And they said, North Hero. And I don't know where North Hero is, but it's Vermont. How far can it be? Turns out Vermont's very long. I mean, it takes a while to get from one part of Vermont to another part of Vermont. And this is in the northern part of Vermont. So I get in my car and I'm driving. I don't really know Vermont that well because I've been there 2 weeks. And so I'm driving up the road looking for South Hero and the assembly. And finally, I missed my exit, which you don't want to do in Vermont because it's 10 miles to the next exit and then you got 10 miles back. And so I went to this little New England church, right? Beautiful white, New England church that you would see on a calendar. And I went in there and I found this little Al-Anon meeting. And so I said, hey, I'm here for the assembly. And they said, oh, this is the assembly. And I was like, I look around the room, there's like 30 people in there, right? So I came from the Southern California assemblies with 300 or 500 people. And there's this room of 30 people. And I thought, oh, now this is different. And so they were talking about their convention, and they had had to put their convention on hiatus because their treasurer took all their money. And I know it's shocking, right? Recovery people don't have any like mental issues or financial issues. And so they were talking about, well, should we even have one? I mean, I think it was very shocking for them. And I talked about my experiences in the conventions and some of the things that we did to sort of make sure some of those things don't happen. And they were very impressed with me. And they said, and so 2 weeks later, the area chair asked me to be the convention chair for the Vermont Convention Reboot. And they gave me $300 and wished me luck. So I said, oh, okay. And boy, did I learn a lot about Vermont in that year and a half that I did this work. And we put on a convention. It was a great convention. And we had maybe 120 people there, something like that. But it was the first time they'd had it in 7 years. And people were thrilled, right, that it started up. And so so then the following year, I had my sponsee do it, and I helped them with that. The following year, I did it again. And then also that year, they were looking for a district rep. So I became the district rep for District 6. And I'll tell you what was really interesting about where I was living is that Rutland, Vermont is where Bill Wilson lived until he moved back to East Dorset, where he was born. East Dorset is just a little bit south of Rutland, Vermont. And so he was born, and they have a place there now called the Wilson House. It's his birthplace. And I didn't know any of that, right? They had this thing, oh, we're having Pioneer Day. And I'm like, what is that? And it's like, well, we all gather around Bill and Lois's gravesite, and then we go to the Wilson House and have a party. And I thought, oh my God, Lois is buried here? Right. So then I drive up to East Dorset, and you got to know where it is. Like, you got to know. And so you kind of walk around the graveyard until you get to a graveyard that's got a bunch of chips, Sobriety chips sitting on it. And you go like, and that's your indicator that Lois is right next to that. Right. So it's Lois and then this guy named Bill. And I was pretty impressed. And it was great because I got a chance to be able to attend some of those meetings at the Wilson House. I got a chance to speak at a fundraiser at the Wilson House. I also got a chance to go up to Dr. Bob's house up in St. Johnsbury, because that's where he grew up. So it was a great experience for me. So I became a district rep. And, and then after I was at the district rep and they did this work on the Vermont convention, I was wondering what to do next. And I got a couple of phone calls from past delegates who had asked me if I'd be willing to stand for delegate. And so thinking about what a cool guy Willie was, I thought, you know, of course, I'm going to go ahead and stand for delegate. And so I stood for delegate and became a delegate for panel 53, Vermont. And I was to the World Service Conference, and I was a little cynical, you know, and I'm like, well, you know, how big of a deal could it possibly be? And oh my God, it was amazing. Like, just standing in that room at the World Service Conference and seeing all those chairs and all the names and all the places those people were from, and knowing this is where Al-Anon business is happening. And I realize that may not be impacting for some of you, but for an Al-Anon fanboy like myself, it was like, I've arrived. This is amazing. And so I got to serve on panel 53. I got to be on the literature committee whenever we talked about we need a fourth reader. And we talked about how this next reader needs to be something that actually is more expansive and talks about people with different types of lifestyles than the ones we've had in the past. And we presented that to the World Service Conference for approval. It's supposed to be done in 5 years. I think we're working on 10, but it should be out in Albuquerque. So I got to be a part of some really remarkable things. And then, you know, and then I was asked to be the spiritual speaker at the closing dinner. And I'm like, it's, you know, and it's such an honor to be chosen by your peers, and your peers are all delegates, and to have the honor of being able to do that is remarkable. And it just forever be a memory that's just indelible in my mind. And so as soon as I was done being delegate, I asked God what he wanted me to do next. And God, in his infinite wisdom, said, well, you know, it was my service sponsor. And he said, you're going to be the Northeastern Regional Delegate Meeting Chair. And so I did that, which was kind of fun. It's actually a fun commitment. But then this other thing came up, and I was on Delegates Online, and they had sent out a message that they were going to be starting the first Native American Al-Anon conference, and they were looking for people to work on the committee. And so I'm a member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation out of Shawnee, Oklahoma. And so this idea of being a part of the first Native American Al-Anon conference was like totally like God calling me. And so I got on that phone call in November of 2017. And there were a few past delegates on there. Norm W. was on there, Judd L. was on there, and Juanita. And I was... And they were like, oh, well, here's what we need. We need to find somebody who has convention experience, who's Native American, and is just Al-Anon. And I was like, I think I'm your guy, right? Because I have that background. And that's how I basically became the first chair of the Native American Al-Anon Conference. And we held it in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we had a little money, not a lot. And we did a couple of fundraisers. We did a taco night fundraiser. They did one in New Mexico. And I basically ran it all out of New Hampshire. So we had our first one, about 120 people showed up. Second year we did it in Santa Fe, and we had about 140. And the percentage of Native Americans who showed up, the percentages started to go up and up and up. And by the time we had our third one there in 2019, I had people on my planning committee whose first experience of Al-Anon was that first convention that we had in Albuquerque in 2017. They saw what we did. They saw what we were about. They wanted to be a part of it, became a part of the committee. We had meetings that started up on the Pueblos in the area where we never had meetings before in the Pueblos. And so what we had is we created a convention that provided a pivot point, a place for people to talk, a place for people to talk about this particular part of the population that is heavily damaged by disordered use, but also have no support for families. Alcoholics can get support, but families don't get support. And there's a lot of sort of overlays in the entire situation when it comes to the Native American community and recovery and substance abuse. And so for us, it was a remarkable success. So we couldn't do it in 2020 because of COVID, and we had to cancel everything. But the plan was to do it in 4 years in one state and then move to another state with the Native American population. So then we moved to Oregon. And then we couldn't do it the first year in Oregon because of COVID. But last year, I called the hotel. I said, hey, you know, we're thinking about maybe not having it because of COVID. And they said, well, we're going to charge for it anyway. And so I thought, okay, well, I guess we're having it. And so we ended up having the 2022 Native American Al-Anon Conference in beautiful Portland, Oregon. And it was amazing. It's an amazing experience. I know some of you have been there who are here tonight. Just to be able to be in this place, we have some men in recovery who play a drum. And they start us out in the morning with a morning prayer. And then after every speaker speaks, the drum plays. And you can feel it. You can feel the power of the drum. I mean, it vibrates against the chest. And it's the heartbeat of the Mother Earth. And the speakers stand there, and everyone in the room thanks them. It takes about 20 minutes for us to get through everybody in the room. And the drum plays the whole time. And the men who are playing it put a ton of effort into doing it. And there's just sort of that sense of community and such a sense of honor and such a sense, too, of how Al-Anon is really for everybody. And so that to me is like just really the apex of my recovery and my service in recovery. We're having it again next year in 2023. It's going to be in Portland, Oregon. We do it for 4 years because that represents the four seasons. And so and then we're going to be moving to another state. I don't know where that is yet. I'll start looking around for a state next year that will host us. We're connected to the area structure. So we make sure that we're actually on the calendar the calendar for the WSO, calendars for other states that have large Native American populations. We work in conjunction. We work with a variety of people who are in the Native American community in terms of their recovery. And so for me, the journey has been amazing. And it's because I said yes to service a lot. And I learned a lot of things in service. And the main things that I learned is that I'm not here to succeed. So I don't even know what that looks like. I don't know what success, I don't know. Because sometimes, you know, to succeed is to have a big problem and have a fundraiser to try to correct it. And so I'm not super concerned about what success looks like. Like somebody said earlier, you can plan the day, but you can't plan the outcomes. The other thing that I learned about service is say yes to service. I didn't know, I thought it was a rule when I first got here, but then it turns out it's not a rule. But it turns out I'm glad I didn't know that, because I just kept saying yes to service. And because of that, my world opened up. I got to know a lot of people. I got to do a lot of different things. I've had a very rich and deep experience of Al-Anon. The last 3 years, I've been the area chair for New Hampshire. And that has been a remarkable experience, because I got a call from the previous area chair. She said, hey, would you mind standing for area chair? I said, oh, and I understood why she wanted me to. There were things going on in the area that were a little disruptive and they were looking for a fresh start. And I said, okay, I'll come in and run. And if I get elected, I'll do the job. And so I did that I think it was November of 2019. So I had one AWSC and then COVID hit. And then my treasurer quit and my group records coordinator quit, all these people quit. And so I was doing like 7 or 8 things to try to keep the lights on. And I think it was difficult for us, but I think what motivated me was to know that when this was all over, we needed to be here. That when this was over, that alcoholism was not going to go away because COVID was here. That alcoholism was continue to be a problem for the friends and families of alcoholics, and that we needed to keep the lights on. And now we're back. We had our first assembly last month and elected a new set of a new delegate and a new area chair. And for me, although it was difficult, that in the long run, it ended up being a real growth opportunity for me. And I really learned kind of what I was made of when things got rough. And so that experience for me has been terrific. A couple of other things that sort of happened because of I said yes to service is that when I did the conference in Santa Fe, the Native American Conference in Santa Fe in 2019, my daughter was on the committee. My daughter came to the previous year and loved it. And so she came. And then, and so she was on the committee. And my parents, whom I had not seen in 25 years, came to the conference. And I was reunited with my parents after 25 years of like sort of a family divide. And this is all Al-Anon, right? Like my parents, when they learned that I was married to an alcoholic, decided they really didn't want anything to do with me. And so they kind of disappeared. And then when I was doing my 4-step work, obviously they came up. And then when I was doing my 9-step work, they came up. And so I just went through this process of spending 10 years of just sending them birthday cards, Father's Day card, Mother's Day card, Christmas cards. I knew where they were. Somebody, you know, ratted them out. And I kept sending cards, you know, with this idea that one day it'll get better. And then one day for my birthday, I got a card from my mom and didn't say very much. It said, you know, mom, but it had a article that she had cut out of I don't know what it's about older people. They love cutting out articles from newspapers and sending them to you. And she had sent me this article by Dear Abby. And it basically said, this is the reason why some kids are bad. They're just born bad. And so I thought, well, it's not great, but it is progress, because she sent me a birthday card. Since then, right, they've melted, right? Because I just kept loving on them. And then my dad gave me his email. Now I talk to my dad every week, but I didn't see them. They lived in Oregon. And so when I was in Santa Fe, they were in Arizona and just said, hey, can we come by and come to your whatever thing you do thing? And I said, yeah, come on by. And they don't know what Al-Anon is. They think they go like, well, I'm glad you got the monkey off your back. But I'm like, no, it's not that. And so they showed up, and it was the first time I'd seen him in 25 years, and the first time my daughter had seen him in 25 years. And what a beautiful moment for me to have this sort of reuniting with my parents at this Al-Anon conference, surrounded by members of my committee who've grown dear to me, and to have their support and to have their love, and for them to dote on my parents. I mean, they just loved on my parents, and my parents were shocked. They're shocked at you people and how loving you are and how kind you are. And they were flummoxed by the whole thing. And then the last time we had the conference, I had it in Portland, Oregon. They live in Portland, Oregon. And they came over near the end of it to sort of see me. And then we spent some time together. And Don C, and some of you know Don, Don is very active in the Native American recovery community. And so he went over and sat with them and initially told them what a problem I am, which is Indian for I love this guy, right? It's like, so you go like, this is what it means in Indian whenever somebody tells your parents that you're a problematic person. And then he went on to talk about, you know, all the things that we've been able to do together in this place. And my parents were super impressed with Don. It's hard not to be impressed with Don. I'm a really grateful member of Al-Anon. My work's not done yet. I stayed up tonight so I could talk to you people and to talk to you about the joy of recovery, the healing of recovery, the energy and the magic of recovery, and the magic that comes with service. Just to say, like, this is not what I came in for. I came to that first meeting and I was like basically thinking, tell me how to get her sober or how to hide a body, right? And everybody was smiling, so I thought it was hide a body, right? They know how to hide a body. And what I got was so different. What I got was an amazing, incredible life with amazing and incredible people. And it was because I said yes to so many things and had an opportunity to be on the firing line of life. And so I appreciate opportunities to tell people about this, to tell you to come to our conference. That's open to everybody. Show up. It's an amazing experience. I'm going to finish out my area chair commitment. I'm going to get going on planning these meetings that are coming up. I've got a couple of speaking things that I'm doing in Massachusetts. I'm going to South Dakota. I'm going to be going to Tennessee next year. And God has something else in mind for me as well. And I'm open to it, right? Let's see what do you got going? What's next? Let me be a part of it. And that's been a really big part of my life. I live a really incredible I live such a great life. It's because of God and because of you people. So I'm going to wrap it up. I know it's a little bit early, but nobody ever complains when I finish a little early. So I like to actually end with a prayer in my language, in my people's language. I'm Potawatomi, and our language is called Bodhi-Wadmi. And so it's a simple prayer. You'll hear me say Migwich, Mama Goznan, and Migwich is just our word for thank you, and Mama Goznan is our word for creator. And the rest of it is just thank you for the day, and thank you for our good health, and help us to be good people today. Migwich, Mama Goznan, Jakshi Gego Kagashtan, Minimino Gishket, Rados Kago Mamazu, and Mini Jitmo, you. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Thanks for letting me share.